League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
In the SEC Conference, we're going to build the best football program in the SEC Conference.
You have now arrived at Stadium and Field.
The kick, it's been lost again! How about it? It's been lost again! It's going to heat one deep down the field. It's going to be to the goal line. It's going to be gone! It's a touchdown! And the Gators have won the game!
You have now arrived at Stadium and Field.
Boys and girls, ladies and gents, welcome to a pop-up episode of Stadium and Gale. It's your boy, Corey.
And it's Dan.
Hey, man, two-man crew. Two Nick Delatorre. You know, family crisis. Not crisis. Family shenanigans going on. He can't pull up and hang out with us, but it's a Friday pop-up show. And we're going to hang out. We got special guests hanging out with us regardless. So it'll be a three-man crew.
Yep, we got a three-man crew. We're going to have a special guest join us here in a second. We hope everybody has a great weekend ahead. Gators play Samford tomorrow night on ESPN or SEC Network Plus, I think.
It's got to be SEC. I don't think ESPN is going to pick up that that type of game.
Yeah, we at my condo building, I'm stuck with DirecTV, and they're fighting with ESPN right now. So, you know, thankfully it's on an ESPN, but I'll be out and about in St. Pete tomorrow. If you're out and about in St. Pete tomorrow and you're looking for somebody fun to hang out with, text me, reach out to me. I always bring the fun party and shenanigans. Corey, what are you doing for the game?
I'm going to watch it at the crib, man, with my son. We got noon Pop Warner tomorrow, so we should be home and settled in at a good time. But that's my plan. After I get out of that sun, just sit on the couch and watch football with him. And then we could celebrate this week.
That's right.
I don't know how much celebrations we're gonna get this fall, but we're gonna enjoy
we're hopefully a lot of highlights. We're gonna treat every win like it's our last one, because it may be Corey.
It may just be.
We appreciate everybody watching on YouTube and X. Hit the like button, hit the subscribe button, hit the super chat. Without further ado, we're gonna bring on a great friend of the program, a great gentleman in real life, a great dancer at Nick's wedding, Neil Blackman from Saturday Down South, also an attorney based in Gainesville, Florida. Neil, it's a pleasure to have you on, my friend.
Thanks, guys. Yeah, I kept thinking about how, like, this could be – there's so few opportunities to celebrate, and I kept thinking about Mullen and the boys in the locker room the last time Samford
came. Oh, man.
And now this time it doesn't feel so bad to do that tomorrow, maybe.
Man, speaking of, I mean, Dan Mullen vibes were definitely around, man. After my man George get the captain.
So the Gators announced Cam James, Damian George, and Rocco Underwood as the captains. Rocco Underwood had the hit of the game last week as the long snapper, flexed over the punt returner. Loved the energy. Didn't love the score with the energy, but you know, he still came and showed out. But Cam James is the other. But Damian George, obviously played right tackle last year, moved into guard. Pro Football Focus and all of that, you know, seemingly had him ranked pretty well during the game. But I think the big play that everybody saw at him was kind of a half-assed run on the interception play. And just kind of an optics thing. You know what I mean, Corey? It's kind of like when we were talking about special teams and when people talk about special teams last year, and then people would ask Billy Napier, like, oh, what's going on with special teams? It's like, what do you mean we're third in the country in EPA? It's like, man, like, you're just kind of insulting the intelligence of the people with the eyeballs watching. So it's not personal on him, but it's just, I don't know, man.
Yeah, just not reading the room well. And that's just been kind of the thing with this staff. Because I think Dan Mullen was purposely just trolling us a little bit with the Marco shoe and making him the captain the next week. But this staff got to have heard, like, just there was former players that talked about George and his hustle during that interception return. So to make him captain just was kind of off. But let's talk about this depth chart, man. We got a lot to talk about with this matchup. Yeah. Tomorrow.
Absolutely. So obviously the big news, I'll pull up the depth chart here in a second. Obviously the big news is Graham Mertz will not be playing in this game. DJ Lagway is the starter. Corey, I know your thoughts. Neil, special guest, you get the first right to talk. What are you looking forward to seeing with DJ Lagway tomorrow?
I just think it gives the fan base joy, right? I think they need just a spark. And I think, you know, you get DJ out there, the highest rated recruit at quarterback since Tebow. First, maybe I'm wrong. I think first freshman quarterback to start. I haven't looked at the game notes yet, but I think first freshman quarterback to start for Florida since Chris Leake. So, you know, pretty big shoes to fill there.
I think Treyon started.
Okay, yeah. So Treyon. Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
so
I think Jacoby Brissett did too. Or no, did he play? He just didn't start, right?
He played.
I think Treyon did then, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, Treyon. So, okay, so it's been a while anyway. But obviously DJ, you know, Gatorade National Player of the Year, high school Heisman winner, every accolade possible. Looked pretty good on the touchdown drive last week. Miami still had their ones out there. Now, you know, they're up 4 touchdowns. So how invested are they on every down? We don't know, but he looked good. It was something to build on. And Yeah, I mean, I think you just need joy, right? I'm not saying they're going to turn the season over to DJ, but I don't know why they didn't have a package for him to begin with last week. And right. So maybe if he plays well, you know, they'll do what they should have done against Miami and have a package for a guy, especially if the right side of your offensive line is going to cave in every game for the next 11. You might as well have a package for a kid that has better legs than Graham does.
Yeah, for me, seeing how just, you know, vanilla the offense has been since he's been here, you're going to need somebody to get off script to make it dynamic. Kind of what Jordan Travis did to Mike Norvell's terrible offense out there in the panhandle. And as we can see this year, if you got a guy that's not getting off script, like, a lot of these plays can get very vanilla. So I think DJ Lagway can elevate the receivers and the players around him play from that standpoint. Excited to see whatever the offense looked like with him. And I thought he looked good versus Miami.
Mm-hmm.
I took in the same consideration that you did where we were in the game, but they did have their ones in the game, so he was facing top-tier talent. But the spring game, just as well, he looked good. You see him make throws that aren't easy throws and tight windows, his anticipation. He's going to make freshman mistakes. Like, we're all aware of that. He's going to make some mistakes. But just how vanilla the offense has been, this could be a good spark. We don't expect him to start Texas A&M that following week, but the moment Graham Mertz start to struggle, you got some spark there that you can look back on and say, hey, let's give this kid a try. And if you don't, I think, like, the boo birds will come out early, man. But yeah, we'll see what Lagway does tomorrow. Good opportunity for him versus subpar talent, I think.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, hopefully, you know, this could be a confidence game for him, right? It's not Anthony Richardson starting against Georgia in his first start, right? So hopefully this is an opportunity to be able to move the ball and just create that continued camaraderie. What I think is good is, you know, a lot of the guys that he's going to be throwing to are guys that were on that second team with him when he was backup quarterback to Graham Mertz, right? So Khalil Jackson. We'll talk a little bit about this. Khalil Jackson is going to be out for the year. He had knee surgery today, I believe. So you start to elevate, you know, the guys that were in that second string group. You know, your Elijah Badgers, your, you know, Aiden Mizell's, your Andy Jean's, the ones that he's been throwing the, or no, not Andy Jean in this case, but, you know, the guys that he's been throwing the ball to, you know, over the last 8 months or so. And hopefully there's some, you know, there's some consistency there and there's some chemistry there. And that's what you're hoping to see, right? Like, we don't know how bad Graham Mertz's concussion is. The way that they're talking about it doesn't make it seem like he's out for an extended period of time. But certainly right. This is an opportunity for DJ Lagway. Unfortunately for Florida, they have Samford where they don't have to potentially rush, you know, Graham Mertz back and he can get healthy. Cause obviously anything with, pardon me, a brain injury or concussion, you want to take slowly. So, you know, he has the arm, he has the speed. Now we've just got to see better blocking, especially out of the right tackle position and the tight end position.
Yeah, I think quarterbacks escaping the pocket helps, and like a dual threat quarterback helps with protection. I don't expect it to be fully fixed, but and also you slow down your pass rush and the RPO because the ability for this guy to run and break big runs is there. So I think that just helps your offensive line out a ton. Quarterback being an eligible runner puts more blockers in front of him, like in a number standpoint, like it just puts us in a better position. Ideally, you would want a guy of DJ Lagway's skill set to be your quarterback in Billy Napier's offense.
Yeah.
But and the offense hasn't looked the same since. I know we gave AR a lot of flack, but that was the most explosive this offense has been. It was a little bit more efficient last year, but efficient didn't get us as many wins.
Right.
This offense being explosive, I think it's what it's got to be. I don't think these guys have the X and O talent to be able to march us down the field methodically, drive after drive. We got to get explosive, and we'll see if we can do that against Samford. But I think that's what we got to get for this season, because I'm not going to scrap the whole season because of game one. We still got football to play.
Sure, yeah.
I didn't like it. You know, everybody didn't like the results, but you still got more games. We haven't gotten the SEC play. For us to be successful, this team is going to have to get explosive. That way we can stay away from penalties, holes, and whiffing on blocks.
Yeah, absolutely. Neil, I want to get your thoughts. What do you think they open up, right? Obviously, Samford is not a good team and obviously not going to be of the same athletic talent of the Gators, regardless if they were a good team or not, right? So just because of the nature of the school, what do you think the flexibility that Billy Napier gives DJ Lagway or who's ever ultimately calling the plays, what kind of flexibility to run the offense you think that they give them tomorrow? And what do you guys both want to see out of him, you know, outside of, you know, making the passes and everything else? What do you want to see out of him tomorrow during the game?
Well, I thought it was interesting that, you know, Monday Montrell talked to the media and one thing he told us was he was impressed with like both DJ's understanding of the offense, but also just how calm he was and he didn't seem too afraid of the moment. Corey knows like it's that some of that's a product of playing pretty big time high school football in Texas. Like he's used to playing against good players. So he gets out there and, you know, he doesn't feel out of place. So I hope that to the extent that he understands the playbook, that they run everything that he understands. You don't need to hold anything back just because you're playing Samford. I mean, it's not like we saw what Lance Guidry said. It's not like Florida's confusing anybody on film schematically right now.
Right.
So you're not holding anything back. I'd also like to see him commit to trying to run the ball, even if they're going to have to run behind the left side of the line all year. And then I'd like to see the younger backs get an opportunity and pass protect, particularly Treyon Webb. I wasn't as familiar with Jacoby Jackson's game, to be honest, but and he's a powerful, violent runner. I'd love to see how he looks in pass protect, because I think anything you can do to kind of give Montrell a break, even if he is still going to be a 20 carry a game guy, hopefully, is good.
Yeah.
Corey, is there anything else that you want to see out of him?
I want to see him get off script and get explosive, like take deep shots down the field. We got a lot of speed at receiver, and it's just not being utilized. So I want to see him stretch the field. I want to see if this offense can stretch the field. And then, you know, because it didn't matter the opponent last year. Like, Graham Mertz just didn't stretch the field, even on inferior opponents. So, if we could get the field stretched this game, that would check off a big box for me. My take on doing the offseason, if this team was a struggle, I think Ladway takes over by midseason if this team continues to struggle. So, I just need big numbers from him to create that type of spark, like Neil was saying earlier, that spark and that conversation amongst media, the fan base, everybody. That's where we at with it. I think we need a spark, and we need him to create that. I like what Neil was saying, too, about the running back position, because I think those guys need more opportunities. I thought Webb should have got more opportunities. I didn't think Montrell was 100% healthy that game. While he did break a big one, but I thought those guys should have – and it's only one football, and we didn't possess the ball and hold the ball for a lot and maintain drives a lot. But this is a game where I want to see the young boys. If Montrell is 100%, let Montrell rest.
Right.
Like, let him play the first quarter. Let's try to get up a couple scores and let these young boys work on their pass protection and also get some touches, bro.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that game experience, no matter who the opponent is always going to beat practice experience. No, absolutely. Oh, so
they're going to come here ready to win. Like, let's not mistake it. Like, last time they played us, they scored 52 points. Yeah.
You know?
100%. They thumping their chest walking into the swamp. And I would, too, if I was them.
All right. Let's look here. Depth chart. Some changes here. Wide receiver, you have Eugene Wilson. Then you see the addition of Tank Hawkins and TJ Abrams there. Would love to see the opportunity for Tank Hawkins to play and TJ Abrams. You know, I've heard good things about both of them this offseason. Tank is obviously a speedster. You know, would love to see him get the opportunity, and would love more than anything for the score to be like 28-0, like in the second quarter. Now, I know that that's not likely going to happen, but I would love for that to happen, to be able to see what that looks like. But that's what I mean. Like, DJ Lagway's been throwing passes to TJ Abrams and to Tank Hawkins in practice, so there might be that connection and chemistry that they have already. So that would be awesome to see. And then you have Shamir DK backed up by Aiden Mizell, and then Elijah Badger and Marcus Burke behind him. Behind them. So obviously we talked a little bit about it. Khalil Jackson will be out for the year with knee surgery. Really sad to see. You know, heard great things about his growth and development during the offseason, and just hate to lose a Gator and somebody that bleeds for this team. But you know, certainly hope that he, you know, gets better, gets healthy, and we'll see him next season.
Yeah, no doubt. Stretch the field. We got Aiden Mizell. We got all this speed. Tank Hawkins, TJ Abrams. These guys can fly, bro. Eugene Wilson. Like, we got a Ferrari in the trailer parks. Like, throw the ball down the field. We got all this speed, and we just not using it. We're going sideways. I don't want to see no sideways plays, man. I know we got to do it, but that cannot be our bread and butter, us going sideways, trying to misdirect. No, stretch the field with all this speed. There's no reason to go get all this verified speed if you're just trying to trick people by going sideways.
Right. Yeah, ball in space like works, but you also have to be able to like move the ball in the air to get into more space, right? Like, I know Billy Napier's offense is like, well, let's just get the guy the ball and they'll figure it out. It's like, well, what if we got him the ball like 12 yards down the field and then they were able to figure it out? Or what if we got it the ball 20 yards down the field and then figured it out a little bit?
Well, it's not
2 yards.
It's the concepts going east to west too, right? Like, I know y'all know this, but I mean, if you're running a drag route where it's east to west with a guy that's got 4 or 5 speed, you're not frightening any of these young defensive backs. They can cover that. I mean, you got to be quicker, right? And we'll see it next week against Texas A&M, or we won't again. You know, with their defensive line's better than Miami's. So, you know, you want to run this east west stuff, that they're going to be fine with that. So if you're going to go east west, at least get the ball out quick, like, you know, Florida did at Miss State a few years ago when they knew they had to play 3 all SEC defensive linemen. So everything was 3-step throw. You know, but if you're going to do it, get them the ball in space.
It's the thing, because like defensive backs, mentality wise, if I know you're not going vertical, I'm playing on the ball of my feet. Like, everything's in front of me. That's a DB's dream, bro. If I know that I don't have to retreat a lot, bro, like, I'm slowly getting into my back pedal because I'm ready to react and come forward. You got to have that vertical threat, bro. Or if not, bro, the safety's going to run the alley. Everybody's going to be crunched down. They're going to make that box a lot more crowded. Right. You got to be able to stretch the field. You can't go sideways all game.
Yeah. So we'll hope to see, you know, him push the ball. Obviously, we know that DJ Lagway has some great arm strength, and now it's just a matter of connecting on the accuracy piece of it, which I'm excited to see his, you know, continued development and improvement there. Left tackle, Austin Barber and Devon Manuel. Guys, did you know last week was going to be a tryout between the two of them for the starting left tackle position? Billy Napier said that Austin Barber proved enough during practice in the game that he's going to be the starter. I said, guys, I assumed that Austin Barber was your best offensive lineman, right? I didn't know he was going into a game one tryout here.
I'm trying to keep it PG, Dan.
We could throw the explicit on this when we post it, Silk. You know what I mean? Like,
I'm trying to keep it PG, baby.
Like, I don't know. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it just kind of like – it's what I said early in the show. It's like you have a lot of fans that have eyeballs, and I know that there's a lot more that goes into it than like what you just see on the field. But like at no point did anybody ever think that Austin Barber was going to be in a head-to-head matchup against Devon Manuel, who like didn't even play much at Arkansas last year. And Austin Barber was maybe, along with Jake Slaughter, your highlight of the offensive line last season. Like,
It's the whole roster. We're not good enough to be rotating. Like, you got to play the best absolute players. Like, Pup Howard was killing 30 plays, and leave Pup Howard until he taps his helmet and say, "Coach, I just can't go no more." And then when he get on the sidelines, you give him an IV and send him back out. Yeah, like, you just got to keep the best players on the field. We're not in a position to be trying guys out, especially with this schedule. This is the week to try guys out. You got to go with the guys you know for certain. And this week, opportunity for, you know, compete a little bit more for starting jobs. But, bro, you're in week one versus Miami, an in-state rival. Like, we shouldn't be competing trying to figure out who the starters in that game. You had all offseason, a spring and a fall camp to figure that out. Like, that's just nonsense. And the wherewithal to even say that in a press conference is wild to me.
This is one of the
fundamental problems with Napier is this paralysis by analysis stuff, where let me get obsessed with what I saw on one series of one scrimmage. And, you know, I'm looking at this film from this scrimmage, and now I think maybe Devon Manuel's pushing a kid who was a freshman All-American and your second highest rated blocker from a grading standpoint last year. No, he's not. This is the same thing that has happened with them in the portal. Is, you know, and I get it. They've made some good portal evaluations. Don't get me wrong. I'm not going to pump sunshine anymore. But what I won't do is, you know, I'm not going to tell lies either. They've made some good portal evaluations, but like, you don't need to sell me on why, like, Joey Slackman, an all Ivy League player, is going to be a guy who can replace the production of, say, Princely Umanmaline or something like that. Like, people, fans have eyes and writers have eyes. Media has eyes. Like, there's a reason that everybody wanted Walter Nolan. He's good, right? There's a reason that everybody wanted Cam Ward. He's good. You know, and it's the same. Like, you watch Austin Barber for 2 years. He's a good football player. Like, he shouldn't be beat. There shouldn't have been a competition.
Right.
Yeah, left guard Najee Harris or Bryce Lovett, and then Rod Kearney. I expect Najee Harris to get most of those snaps. Center Jake Slaughter, Rod Kearney, and Jason Zandamella. Right guard, you have Damian George or Cam Waits, and then Christian Williams behind. And then at the right tackle position, scroll down here. The right tackle, it's Brandon Crenshaw Dixon or Cam Waits, and then Caden Jones. We talked about it last, you know, on Monday. Cam Waits registered a 0 in pass protection from PFF, which is, again, a score that I've never seen before. Again, not being critical.
Same score as me.
Not a score that I've seen. Again, not personal, right? Like, not an individual attack, but it's like we've got to figure something out, right, at the right tackle and the right guard position, but mainly that right tackle position. I mean, what do you guys think we do? I mean, obviously tough to evaluate against Samford compared to like what Texas A&M might bring or Tennessee or Texas or whatever it might be down the future. But what do you guys think Florida should do there? I mean, I'm high on Caden Jones and say, hey man, like obviously what we saw last week wasn't good. So why don't we try something else? Right. But I don't want to do this definition of insanity thing. Cause buddy, I feel like we're 15 games into the definition of insanity.
Yeah. I've heard good things about Caden Jones, but I heard good things about a lot of players. So I want to say Caden Jones, they speak highly of him early on campus. He's a young boy, but
yeah,
I mean, this is the ideal situation to put him in on a team that we assume to be inferior. But if you put him, I don't know who he's facing. If he's facing a fifth-year senior or something like that, he may get manhandled by a 25-year-old grown man. We're just in a blender on that side. They're gonna have to scheme around it. I don't see a way they could fix it. This is the bed they've made. You know, like we've all criticized Sell and development and the recruiting at that spot, having two coaches, and there was no changes made in the offseason to correct any of this. And then like one of the comments and they were talking about, even what Neil was saying, speaking about the transfers and the evaluations, I don't know if the evals are bad. Mm-hmm. Like the development of CRC, the development of Kelby Collins, like these borderline five-star guys we brought in, they're not developing. So I can't say that these transfers, like Joey Slatman was highly sought. Like we was losing sleep over this kid in the offseason. He was highly sought, like the number one defensive tackle in the portal. And then all of a sudden, like he's on a milk carton. So it's, to me, everything's going back to coaching and developing. Like that's it. I can't really judge these kids because according to the star rankings, which work for years and years now, these guys are talented. The roster's talented. So The only common denominator between, you know, the Mullen guys we got off the roster and now that we got Billy guys is the coaches.
Yeah.
That's it. Yep.
Tight end, Arlo Sportingham, Amir Jackson, or Tony Livingston. The other tight end, Hayden Hansen, Scott Isaacs, or Tony Livingston at the tight end position. They got abused in pass protection and run protection at the tight end position. So hopefully, you know, that's, you know, an improvement. But, you know, again, you know, your right side of the line, right guard at times, definitely the right tack on that tight end position got abused against Miami. So hopefully, you know, it doesn't happen again tomorrow. I was just looking, Corey, at Samford's roster. Now, they don't have a depth chart out there, unfortunately, but most of their roster on the defensive line is graduate transfers, juniors, and seniors. They have one freshman and one sophomore. So probably going up against some 24-year-olds. Yeah.
Yeah. Grown man, with kids, you know, mortgage, a side insurance job, like all that. I need a tight end position. I like Arlis Bortenham and his size and everything he can bring to the table. He caught a pass around the goal line, which I thought he should have dropped his helmet in and got to the end zone on. I need these guys to get tougher. Catching the ball, like this entire team, like who's the leaders? Like, where's the aggression? Like, I need to see some football energy of some sort from this team. Only time I got it was pregame when Merckx was all hyped up. But when the whistle got blown, it's not a whole lot of football energy. Pup brought that energy. I like Pup on defense. I like Shamar on defense. You've seen some sparks on defense, but offense, who's your leader? Like, who's firing these guys up? We need somebody to step up.
Yeah. Because not the coaching staff, right? I mean, the coaching staff is not a hype-up crew, right? And I think Gerald Chapman kind of is. Go ahead.
Teams take on the demeanor of their coach. Like, they do. Yeah, they take on the demeanor of their coach. So this team is very chill, especially on offense.
Yeah. Running back, Montrell Johnson. Hopefully we don't see a ton of him. Treyon Webb. Jaden Ball or KD Daniels or Jacoby Jackson. Would love to see a lot of those four. You know, definitely Treyon Webb is going to probably be the guy that gets the most snaps at that position, but would love to see Jaden Ball. I think he had one carry. I think Jacoby Jackson had two last game. I don't remember if Kane Daniels had any last game, but the way Jacoby Jackson ran on those two plays, he looked like that Damian Pierce. Remember when his helmet fell off and he was fighting his way to the end zone? I'm not comparing Jacoby Jackson to Damian Pierce, chat, but like that's just the energy that I saw out of him.
Yeah, I was thinking like, man, maybe Stephen Harris' lie wasn't a lie. You know, he showed some Frank Gore energy on that on those plays. Give the boys some more touches, bro. Like we know what Montrell brings to the table. This game, we don't need to see a whole lot of Montrell. Let him do his thing early first quarter. But these young boys, Jayden Ball, I like everything I saw from him in the spring game. I like Kaden Daniels. I like Jacoby. Like, play them boys. Let's see if we get a different style. We gotta find a way to make up because ETN is a missing piece at this point. Like, we can't say we don't miss him because we do. It was a 1-2 punch. So you at least got to find your 1-2 punch, in my opinion.
Right. Yep. And so on the offensive side of the ball, those that will be dealing with injuries are Graham Mertz, obviously, with a concussion. Jaquavion Frazier has a lower body injury. Don't know if we were expecting to see much. Andy Jean, upper body injury, in Khalil Jackson with his ACL repair that he had today. So that's the offensive side of the ball. Anything more on the offensive side of the ball that you guys want to talk about?
I mean, put Frazier at right tackle. Fuck it. He'd been everywhere else.
Yeah, yeah.
he's strong. Like, no, I'm just kidding. No, that's it for offense, man. That's it for offense. We'd like to see Kern to get more snaps.
That's been everywhere. Jamarcus Weston's been everywhere.
Who did I say? Who did I say?
You said Jake Frazier's.
Oh, yeah, Weston. My bad. Wrong old guy.
Yeah, yeah. Both recruited by Urban Meyer. All right, on defense – you have Justice Boone at the F or Cameron James, Captain Cameron James, or Tyreek Saff and LJ McCray. I didn't see a lot out of them in game one at that position as a whole. So definitely want to see some drastic improvement. If for anything, confidence, right? Again, you can't compare Miami and Samford, but you've got to see them do something this game because that's a group that we talked very, very highly about this off season, and I don't want the egg on my face. You know what I mean? I'm too prideful.
Yeah. I'm just praying that Miami line is just real, like just top tier premium stuff, bro, because that pass rush, whew, it was ugly last week. We generated no pressure. Interesting that Cam James is the captain this week. I heard in the off season that he was the better pass rusher out of that position. So interested to see if how many reps play out in this game. We'd love to see him play more. Even LJ McCray, like he's a five-star for a reason. This is a game he should get reps in.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Nose tackle, Desmond Watson or Cam Jackson, and then Micah Boyro after that. You guys, I watched a little bit of the game, the one that's like cut up. Miami knew what they were doing when Des Watson was out on the field. They were running the hurry up, keeping him on the field. So, you know, that's something that you've got to watch out for in the future for the Gators there. But, you know, again, Cam Jackson, man, we've told a lot of lies about Cam Jackson, man. And I'm not seeing it. Right. Micah Boyru played, you know, a number of snaps as well during that game. But that nose tackle position right now, man, is looking like a big weakness. And the loss of Jamari Lyons, in my opinion, is definitely glaring right now.
100%. Like I said, I'm just praying Miami offensive line is just really, really good. And one of the best offensive line we'll face this fall, you know, and we'll find out.
No slackman either with the injury. So,
right,
I mean, you know, one of these guys has to step up. It was funny. Like Cam James is a guy that I watched, like watching as much of that game a second time as I could stomach. And it wasn't a lot, but like Cam James looked pretty good at times. So it was weird to go back and kind of look at some of the PFF grades and see that he wasn't like the eye test was better than the grade, I guess. So maybe there were some plays where he wasn't doing what he was supposed to be doing, but I thought he was pretty productive.
Let's see. Yeah. Let's move down here. And you've got Caleb Banks and Kelby Collins at Jack. You've got TJ Searcy or George Gums and Jack Pyburn rounding out the defensive line here. So any thoughts on those guys before we move on to linebackers here?
Kelby Collins is a guy that I thought played pretty well last year a couple different times early in the season and, you know, has kind of milk carton since then. And like, are they, you know, it gets back to that point that Corey's making, like development, like coach these guys up. And this was a guy that, was basically a five-star recruit. I mean, he was what?
He showed sparks. Yeah. He showed sparks game one Utah last year.
Yeah. Him and Utah, Tennessee, just some really great moments.
A full year later, they should be better. These guys should be making plays, man.
He should be. He shouldn't be an or on a depth chart with his talent.
Yeah. No, you're right. Linebacker Shamar James, Miles Graham, or RJ Moten. The other linebacker position is Pop Howard or Derek Wingo and Jaden Robinson.
Why is there or? Right. What are we doing?
Yeah,
I love Wingo. You know, shout out to him. Great, great Gator, man. Lead from the sidelines, brother. But there should be no or by Pup's name. Pup is him. Let that guy play. Let him lead the team. Let him, like, get guys riled up, bro. Like, I just don't get it. I don't get the rotations, the ors. No, man. Let it be per competition. Let the best 11 play until they tap in their helmet.
Yeah, Pup Howard ranked as the third best on pass rush grades and the best on run defense of any player. Jaden Robinson was ranked as the second best player on defense in coverage grade, and Grayson Robinson or Pup Howard was ranked as the third in coverage grades, right? So Pup Howard, my opinion, best Gator on Saturday, on this past Saturday.
100%.
I think the Gators have a true linebacker in him. You know, I think he's an incredible talent, and I think that he's a potential all SEC player. I thought that George Gumbs played well as well. So in what
he
we
did,
saw,
sure. He did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now Gumbs is living up to the billing. They didn't lie about Gumbs. They lied about a lot of players and their coach speak, but I don't want to keep harping on the same thing. You just can't have like Pup like on the bench unless he's tired. Like Wingo, the seniority, trying to get guys reps. Like we're not. That's for good teams. Like rotations are for good teams. We're not a good team. You just got to play the absolute best guys. I know in recruiting they sell that. Oh, we're gonna play a lot of people. The rotations, all that. It's cool, but it doesn't win you games. That's for Bama. That's for Georgia. You know, the guys that are winning at a high level, they can rotate because there's no drop-off when you're bringing in the second guy. There's a huge drop-off when Pup leaves the field.
Right.
Yep.
Yep. So at Sam, you have George Gumbs, Aaron Childs, and there he is, Silk, Jamarcus Weston. he's there. He's on the chart. On the chart.
Yeah, yeah.
At star, you have Aaron Gates and Alfonso Allen. Now, we talked briefly a couple of months ago about Alfonso Allen for maybe 44 seconds. Alfonso Allen is from Miami. He's a three-star cornerback, defensive back. He went to Baylor, played at Baylor, I believe, for a year, and is now a walk-on at the University of Florida. So that's maybe a name from a couple years ago. Florida was recruiting him, and some of the other Florida schools were recruiting him. Like I said, ended up at Baylor. But that's who he is. So it's not just like Marco Rubio's son is out there like playing the star position like he was. Like
He might get a shot, man. They're rotating a lot.
But that's who he is. I would imagine that Aaron Gates will be the guy at the star position, with Sharif Denson out for this game as well. On defense, Gators are missing Jamari Lyons, Joey Slackman, Devin Moore, who, like, we've talked about, like, if he could stay healthy, like, all SEC player, but, like, AC joint issue, like, he's out for a while. Sharif Denson's out, Bryce Thornton's out, and then Asa Turner's hamstring and Dignity were left at the 45-yard line against Miami.
That was crazy. But more to, like, we're talking about just overall in the DB room, I want to see more Dejon, to be real with you. I've seen a little bit of Jakeem. Not a lot of playmaking being made at my secondary. And, like, all these guys are highly regarded guys. Jordan Castell as well. He's got a have we got to that position? I don't want to jump the gun.
Not really. No. Let's hold off on Castell. I mean, we can talk about cornerbacks. We've got Jason Marshall, Teddy Foster, then Jakeem Jackson, DeJon Johnson, and Jameer Grimsley.
They should be open for competition. I thought Brandon Marshall. I'm not Brandon Marshall. I thought Jason Marshall played solid, and he's, I get where he's at from leadership standpoint, but it should be open competition in the DB room. Jameer Grimsley, highly regarded guy coming out of Florida, then went to Bama. We got him to transfer out to the Saban retirement. DeJon, highly regarded. Even with the other safety spot, Gregory Smith, I think he could play good football, make that position wide open. This is a game where you open competition. Yeah. Jordan Castell's got to play better football. He had a full season of making these type of errors. He looked lost a lot back there last week.
Yeah.
And if we're going to put oars out there, that's what we're like, why ain't there no oars in these spots?
DB should be oars. Not
yeah, 100%. Put oar in these spots.
Yeah, let's some PFF grades. DeJon Johnson ranked as the Gators' best in coverage. He did not allow a reception during the game. Had two tackles. Only had six plays that were charted. Going down the list here, you have to go far down before you get to the other cornerbacks. Sharif Denson allowed three catches on three targets for 31 yards. Jakeem Jackson allowed four catches on six targets for 62 yards. Jason Marshall allowed two catches on two targets for 34 yards. Asa Turner, two catches, two targets, 53 yards. We talked about the big plays, right? Like yards, Miami had 203 yards after catch against this Gators defense.
Yeah, abysmal. Yeah. We need oars. Oars in the DB room.
Yeah, we do need a lot of oars. And let's get Jakeem's confidence up Saturday. I think that's two of the plays where I saw people saying he got cooked on were NFL throws by Cam Ward, where he was in great position and didn't commit interference. Now, maybe you coach him up different. You must champ him and tell him just if you think you might be beat, pick up the flag, we'll play the next down. But man, I mean, a couple of those throws, he's doing what he's supposed to be doing. And that stuff is going to be, it's going to come the more he plays.
Right.
A guy I'd like to see, honestly, I don't even know if we're on safeties yet. If we're not, I'm sorry.
Yeah, we can move to safeties now. Yeah.
Yeah. I would just say like DJ Douglas is a 6-year senior and makes the most ridiculous, stupid play in that football game. Like, you fought your rear end off to get Gregory Smith to come to your school. Put him on the floor. Put him on the field.
Put him
out there.
Yeah, I've said even with when Turner was there, this is my take in the offseason. Like, Turner's going to be a guy that could possibly come downhill and make some plays, run the alley in the run game. But on the back end, like, I got to see guys that make plays. And I haven't seen that, even with Jordan Castell. Gregory Smith has that rumor from guys that I know that are from where he's from, that he can fly around. He can cover a lot of field. Freshmen, these guys are upperclassmen making freshman mistakes. Put the young boy back there. Give me an oar. This is the game. I think Red Smith need to get more snaps. And I don't know how, like, what Traquez Bridges is doing, but give him some snaps as well. Jordan Castell shouldn't be safe at that safety spot, bro. He's just not playing well enough. If I'm a quarterback, if I'm an offensive coordinator, I'm looking to pick on that position, bro, because those guys just don't make plays. And why, of course, throw the ball down the field.
Yeah.
They can't cover a tackle.
Yeah, DJ Douglas, four catches on four targets, 67 yards, 17 yards after catch, and then a picture of him in the bushes as well. So a sixth-year senior and a fifth-year senior looked completely lost out there, right? And obviously Asa Turner.
That bushes thing is crazy, man. Like,
I mean, and you know what? No, exactly. And if he hadn't ended up in the bushes, we'd still be talking about the personal foul.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not a good day for a sixth-year senior.
Yeah. It just wasn't good for football for us to not have any oars in the secondary. That's egregious.
Yeah.
I mean, that's even an oar beside Aaron Gates. I want to see what Aaron Gates do. I'm high on him. So I want to see. This is not a great test for him, but I just want to see anybody that can make plays. I don't care about the opponent. Just playmakers make plays no matter the opponent. So let me see guys just make plays in that secondary because they're going to test us.
Yep. Yeah, no, not a single oar outside of the star position where you have Aaron Gates and Alphonso Allen. Oars everywhere else on the depth chart, but not there. Kickoff returner is Montrell Johnson, Elijah Badger, Jaden Ball, or Jacoby Jackson. Three oars there. And then punt return is Eugene Wilson or DK. Neil, what were your thoughts on DK's punt returning in last game?
Yeah, I mean, I thought he looked good. I thought, you know, I thought the special teams was pretty good. Normally, I'd get mad at Rocco for talking trash up down 21 points.
Somebody got to talk trash.
Yeah, I mean, you know, good for him. And it's not Rocco's fault they gave up 27 yards on a screen pass on the next play, right? Like Rocco made a nice play. The defense comes out there and gets a stop. That's great, but they didn't. Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned, Rocco had perfect snaps all game, right? He did his job.
100%. He did his job. DK looked pretty good. He looked pretty good on the kick returns.
I think it's just frustrating because you hear some of these names. This isn't about Rocco Underwood, but you hear about some of these guys, you know, preseason, all Pac-12. You know, this guy's going to come and make an impact. This guy understands the defense. This guy's – you know, an all Ivy League player of the year, a defensive player of the year, or this person's done that, or former four-star or five-star recruit. And then I see them go to like other schools and I'm like, oh, wow. Like Jared Verse was really good and he came from Albany. And it's like, why can't Florida get any of these guys to make like a huge impact? It's disappointing to see like these guys that like you feel like have talent or wanted by everybody come to Florida. And it seems like there's like a vacuum that sucks the talent out. And they're like, they're walking around like the Monstars, like after the power gets taken away.
Yeah, it is about the Jimmy and Joes, but like the like coaching at this in the SEC at this high of a level, like you got to be smart. Kirby Smart, like, nope, he's smart.
Yeah,
Will Muschamp, these are football guys, but these are very intelligent guys when it comes to X's and O's. Guidry, Miami staff, they got smart guys on that end. And you just can't come out with these same four or five plays. Like, they knew our tendencies. Eventually, you got to know your own tendencies and go against your own tendencies. And you just not seeing a lot of that. Like, even some of our sideways plays, like, what plays are drawing them up when we're doing this sideways stuff for us to spring something big off of it? It's just, like, not a lot of ingenuity when it comes to play calling on both sides of the ball. We didn't generate pressure. If you're a defensive coordinator, your job is like for that quarterback not to feel safe and not to feel that comfortable, especially in your own building. I didn't think we came up with any creative stunts, blitz packages to even affect the quarterback at all in that game. So it's a lot to be desired. We got out coached like big time. That's why like Elijah Badger is still Elijah Badger. I don't think he forgot how to play the wide receiver position, and we're just not seeing. He made one good catch and those good ball placement by Mertz, but then he disappeared. It's coming down to these coaches. It's not a talent issue. You know, it's nothing other than coaching. Straight up.
What was I just going to say? I don't remember.
I had a question for Neil. So Neil was on I forget who show you was on.
Probably the Saturday Down South podcast.
You spoke about like there possibly being some chatter with them starting to look at for a Billy Napier replacement. What are you hearing?
Yeah, so I mean, I've had conversations with a few conversations with three high level donors. Those conversations started Saturday night, probably on my drive home from the game. One of them called me. And they've continued through yesterday. I think first, you guys got to remember these guys are fans, right? Like, and they give the University of Florida millions of dollars, or in one case, hundreds of thousands of dollars. But, and they want Florida to be good at sports. but they want a return on their investment, and all that's reasonable. They also just want to win. They're still fans, right? So if Florida goes out and beats Texas A&M and Miss State and Kentucky, maybe the story changes. But for now, the story from all three of them is that the clock is running out, and now we're in the math problem area, which is we're in the Dan Thompson specialty. Like, this is where we need Dan's professional expertise. Yeah. The buyout is $25.8 million at the end of the year. The difference with Nathan's buyout. That's it.
All they need. Hey, hold
the
on.
The difference, sir. Yeah.
Where's that GoFundMe at, you know?
So the difference, and here's the thing. The difference with Billy's buyout and, say, Jimbo's or Mullen's is that Billy gets 50% of his buyout up front. So let's say they fired him after they lose to Kentucky for the third straight time. All right? In that scenario, yes. In that scenario, the buyout would be $27.7 million. So that means he gets $13.8 up front, pretty much. And then you got to buy out every staff member that isn't retained after the season, which you can safely assume is everybody except for maybe the DB coach, because everybody likes him. I mean, everybody in the industry, not just – you know what I mean? But so let's just say ballpark the number at $17 million. That's the math in terms of just the money you have to pay now, not what you're paying, who you go get. So then the way one of these donors put it to me is, okay, at what point does what we have to pay now, $17 million, become less than what we lose if we keep him? From a donation standpoint, from an NIL collective fund injection standpoint, and then from these three guys, from a big donor standpoint. And that's where I thought the conversations were interesting. One of the three donors I spoke to said he was already at the point where, barring a dramatic turnaround, the phrase he used was not another red cent, barring something massive happening in terms of wins and losses. So to me, where does that leave things? You know, it leaves things that, like, people that love the university and give it a lot of money are really mad that Florida's still not winning football games. But they're also – they have some power because they can stop bankrolling projects until a move is made. It also means nothing has been decided yet. I think there's contingencies. One of them is DJ Lagway. He could light the world on fire. Is that likely with this offensive line? Nah. But – it's possible he could. There's 11 games left, like Corey said, man. They could go and win a bunch of them, and this isn't a problem. Another problem that's not a problem is the Ben Sass thing. Although I will say, I think that change is kind of – I talked to a friend. So I was telling Dan before the show, I do some election law work, and I have a friend that's real close with Ben Sass. And so I asked – you know, hey, what has been? This was last year after the Florida State game. And Sass was already concerned with the trajectory of the football program after Florida State last year. So to me, if you go out and have the most embarrassing performance by a Florida football team, I've been going to games since 1988.
Ever.
That game wasn't embarrassing. It made me sick to my stomach.
Yeah.
Yes.
I thought it was just the most disgusting, unprepared, unprofessional performance I've ever seen by a Florida Gator football team. I think Ben Sass might have been stirred to action immediately. He is not the president. We know how President Fox works because we've been around him a while. His leadership style tends to be more patient. But I say it doesn't change things too much because there's this stuff. Fox has all the authority to do something if he wants. Mm. The Board of Governors gives it to him. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to worry about that. What you do have to worry about is the math. And the math is, at some point, and it's not just big donations. It's you buy season tickets, you can make a contribution. Well, somebody that might have contributed $1,500, they might contribute the minimum $100 or whatever.
Right.
All that stuff adds up. Florida fans are going to buy tickets, sure. But eventually, the math problem becomes we lose more than the $17 million that it takes to keep him if we don't. And when you're still trying to build your NIL collective up, you can't afford for donations to dry out. So Florida's in a tricky spot. But everybody should know that there are people that care very deeply that are already trying to figure out what the solution is. Is that bad for Billy Napier? I don't know. I mean, it's up to Billy Napier and how his football team performs.
I don't think, like, I tweeted this, bro. There's 11 games to get one. I still think, like, I don't know if he's the guy. I know he's not the guy. You know, like, you make it, get a guy like Lagway to elevate a coach's play. Well, like I said, right, like when Travis did with Mike Norvell, and they all sitting at 0-2 trying to figure out, do we got the right guy? Because you could get a quarterback to come bring, like, Lagway is the type of talent that could come in here, regardless of what they say he's doing in practice and he didn't flat out win the job. He is a gamer. He could come in here, start throwing some crazy passes, making some things happen. We spark and go on a run. Regardless of that run, I don't feel like Billy Napier is the coach for the Florida Gators. That's just where I'm at with it. I don't think he has the it factor. I don't think he has the overall understanding of what it is to be a coach here, rivalry-wise. You know, to face Kirby Smart, a guy that want to kick our teeth in as a former Georgia guy. Like, he just don't get it. You feel me? He's too calm. So that's just where I'm at with it. Is, you know, I don't make those type of decisions, but I don't think there's a lot he can do outside of winning a national championship to make me feel like he's the right coach for the University of Florida.
I mean, I think there are already people that feel that way. And what I'll say, so it was interesting, like, he was accountable at that press conference on Saturday in the sense that he said he was embarrassed and it's on him. But he also, in the same breath, said, well, we've made some progress. At which point, I mean, I looked at Nick and was kind of like, what is he talking about? What progress have you made? I just don't think Florida knows what it wants to be. And this is what I wrote at Saturday Down South over the weekend. Like, what is Florida good at, right? Montrell Johnson is good. Okay, but they didn't go back to that off-tackle play that scored a touchdown until it was 38-10. They didn't even get in that formation again until it was 38-10. What do they want to be? What do they want to be? Because the 24/7 composite tells a handful of white lies, but it's been pretty true forever and ever. This is a talented football team. And the other thing that I think is super important, and you all probably know this, but like Florida's NIL situation isn't as bad as some of the optics suggest. Mm-hmm. Like
they're solid.
Florida
NIL situation is solid, bro. Like
Florida lost those kids to Auburn because of NIL in their class last year, but like they didn't lose Xavier Filsaime because of NIL. Like their NIL package for him was fine. I know that it was. I know what Texas's was, and it was because that kid wanted to win football games.
I think even the Auburn kids, the kids that went to Auburn, if we're winning, I think like those kids don't explore out and start being inquisitive about other NIL options.
That might be true, right?
And our bags are bigger if we're winning, right? Just talking to recruits and people around it, bruh, and from certain situations, the competition, some of our recruits outside of Miami who just sometimes get ridiculous with what they hand out. Now, we're very competitive in NIL. It's just not a real thing. Why always can be better, right? You know, there's always can be better strategy with a lot of things we do. We're paying guys really good right now. Like, our players are getting good checks, and I don't think that's a problem at all. Our problem is the product on the field. Four losing seasons in a row is our problem.
Yep. I mean, I think the one thing I would say just to add to that is, but there is some old guard that still are, why are we paying kids to play football? And like, to those people, to the extent they're listening to Stadium Gale, and they should be listening to Stadium Gale, but like, stop it. That's what I would say to those people. Like, it is not immoral or wrong to pay young people for being good at football. And you can say Miami bought their team all you want. You can say, you know, Southern Cal and Lincoln Riley bought some key players all you want. That's what they should be doing right now. And so, like, that's where we're at. And Florida had some badass teams paying poor kids who were really good at football in the 1980s.
Yeah.
And, like, Florida got hammered. And I swear there's generational trauma about that stuff, guys. Like, everybody thinks it's all wrong. I think you hang a national champion 1984 banner in the swamp. Like, but that's just – that's just where I'm at on it. Like, yeah, it's time for everyone that still does have reservations about it to get over it. And especially with the revenue share money coming, there's going to be even more money to spend.
Mm-hmm.
So it's time to be super aggressive about that. But if you win games, the bags get bigger.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And I mean, we've talked a lot about it on the show, and especially with the economy. I mean, obviously the stock market's doing well, but there's a lot of, you know, question marks in the economy right now. And a lot of the people that are giving a lot of money to the University of Florida are also being asked by a lot of other people to donate a lot of money to their causes. And they're also being cautious about what's happening in the economy right now. So you're really trying to fight, you know, for that sliver of the money that they're willing to give up and are willing to give. And at some point, if the product's not there and the ROI is not there, then they're just going to find other causes to give that money to until there's a change. Right. And like, that's where we've talked about. It's like the fan base is very loud and very noisy right now in terms of just being angry and upset with Billy Napier. And that's perfectly fine. But we've also talked about like what apathy can bring, right? Of like, oh, I'm not going to go up to that game. So like, I'm not going to buy tickets. I'm not going to do the concessions. I'm not going to buy the apparel, right? Or going to do that less, right? Maybe instead of going up for four games this year, maybe only go up for one or two. And then that starts to impact the bottom line a lot. And so that's what you were talking about, you know, when we first got onto this segment. So, you know, I think that that's a huge thing that Florida could potentially be grappling with. And that's why it's hard, right? Like it does cost a lot of money, and then it's going to cost a lot of money to buy out whoever the new coach is going to be. And then it's going to cost a lot of money to bring that new person in. And then I don't know all of these staffers and everything else. I don't know what their contracts and everything else look like. Like you're talking about a lot of money, but what is the alternative could be a drastic creation of apathy that could cost hundreds of millions of dollars, not just to University of Florida, but to the city of Gainesville and the university as well.
Yeah. I mean, that's it, Dan. And that's why, you know, it's a math problem. The one other thing I should add is that all three of these gentlemen seem to think that the solution is to at least pursue a name if they have to get to that point.
Mm-hmm.
That it's not, you know, Florida has this tradition. We're going to go get this next young up and comer. And no, sir. I guess you when you hit on Billy Donovan and you hit on Urban Meyer, maybe you feel swaggy about that. Right. But Florida hasn't won an SEC title since 2008. Mm-hmm. In football. They haven't been to the college football playoff. There's a very good chance Missouri is going to go to the college football playoff before Florida does.
Yeah.
Like it's time to go get somebody that can actually fix it. And I think that's kind of the consensus on all these guys. You know, yeah, I mean, there's games to be played, and maybe Napier can turn it around, and they haven't made any decisions yet. But once that day comes, you know, I don't think Florida's going to go and hire Rhett Lashley. That's, I guess, the point I'm making.
Yeah, I'll tell you what we were talking about on the show, and then I want to get to Chris Sorley's comment here. You were talking about on the show, and like Lance Leopold was a name that got brought up last week, and it's like, I'll be honest with you. Like, I think that Lance Leopold's a good coach and he's making some improvement at Kansas. Nick brought up Jamie Chadwell at Liberty from Coastal Carolina. I'm like, buddy, you are going to be fighting a riot if Florida goes to get another. Yeah, you're good. If Florida has to go hire somebody that people have to go to Wikipedia to learn more about them, like they want the big name. And obviously, like, the alternative to that is you have three coaches in college football that have won a national championship. Two of them are never leaving their schools, and one of them is like almost 80 years old, right? In Mack Brown, right? So it's hard, right? And it's not an exact science, but like Florida's got to go big game hunting. And we were talking about on the show last Monday, Neil, like I don't know when in any sport Florida's ever gone for like a big dog in anything, right? I mean, Steve Spurrier, like I got corrected in the comments, like, oh, he like won back-to-back ACC titles. And I was like, all right, whatever, fine. Like maybe Steve Spurrier then. But like in basketball, Billy Donovan, no. Mike White, no. Todd Golden, no. In baseball, no for anybody. And then, you know, Kevin O'Sullivan's worked out, but he was an assistant at Clemson. And then your last four coaches have been people that nobody's really heard of. And Urban Meyer like worked out, but like Urban Meyer had 2 years at Utah before coming here. Right. So
yeah,
Urban Meyer was highly sought
after. He was very highly sought after, but
I thought that was a slash hire.
Yeah, it was a splash hire. It was still risky, but right, I mean anybody, sure. But it was definitely splashy. Alex Galesh is another guy I have immense respect for. And I heard his name and I thought, man, he's in year two at South Florida. Like if he did that, they would burn the stadium down.
Yeah.
I mean, like you know.
And that's the thing is like, you don't
know. I like the guy, by the way.
Yeah. Like maybe Alex Galesh, maybe like Jamie Chadwell could.
Oh, he's a good name, man, for UCF or something. But this is University of Florida. Like you got to get a guy. And I'm not like, I understand everybody's slow approach to Lane Kiffin, but he's a proven play caller. He's a proven winner. He's been around, he's football royalty. And he has that dog in him. Like he's going to treat rivalries like they're rivalries.
He's good in the portal.
Correct. You just need somebody to
code a package. He embraces kids getting paid. Pause. You know, yeah, he embraces people getting paid. He's good in the portal. There's a lot of reasons to maybe go that direction. It's, you know, and I'm glad you brought up UCF because Gus Malzahn played for a national championship and they hired him.
Yeah.
Right. Which is a good hire for them.
Yeah, it's a good hire. He beat Nick Saban about four times and took a team to a national title game. And UCF went out and hired him.
Yeah. Neil, here's a question from Chris. Army sniper Chris Soy, if you win games, that's correct. Neil Napier's and winning games. Who's your pick for replacing Napier? Appreciate the super chat, Chris.
I think they're going to – I think, assuming that this does not turn around, I think they will make a – I do think they'll make a big run at Kiffin. I think they'll do it the way that Lane would want to. I think they'll be kind of loud about it, which is the – not the Florida way.
Yeah.
It's not really the coaching search way. But I think there's three jobs that Lane would take that he probably dreams about having. One is Alabama. The second is Ohio State. And the third one is Florida. So I think it would be one of those things where he knows he can go 10-2 in Oxford and they'll build him a statue whenever he wants to leave there. But Florida's a better job. It's a better program.
Sure.
Or historically. That would be my thought.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's been politicking for that Florida job for a while. I don't think it's by accident.
For sure.
Fans are saying, we got more money and we're more – our NIL program is better. I get all of that. But he hasn't been trolling and doing this whole thing with Florida for this many years for no reason. I thought he wanted the Miami job. Miami just didn't go out to him, and they went out to Crystal Ball. And then Florida State – it was some rumors out there that if Norvell was to take another job, that's something they would go after. So I do think he wants to be back in the state. And he just fits the criteria, man, of what we need.
Right.
Just overall. We'll see how it all plays out. We still got football games to play.
That we do.
Yeah, I might need to do some massaging on the John Reeves relationship if Lane Kiffin gets hired. But we'll figure it out. And then Anthony Beck, appreciate if we hire another up-and-comer, I might have to up and whoop somebody's ass. So just not us, you know, not us.
I'm going to call you Anthony Beck, Anthony Alex Galesh Beck from now on.
Neil, like, what do you think, right? Like, we talked a little bit about it. Like, Kent Fox has the opportunity to, like, unilaterally run the program or run the university right now, and that includes the athletic department. Like, there's been a lot of controversy over the last, you know, number of years, you know, with Scott Strickland. There was a women's basketball coach situation, there was the women's soccer coach. Obviously, Dan Mullen didn't work out long term, doesn't look like Billy Napier is going to work out long term. Like, does Scott Strickland potentially get a third head coaching hire? Like, do you think that Kent Fox would potentially step in? Because, like, I would imagine Florida's not going to have a new president until at least January at, like, the very earliest. And I would imagine, in my opinion, it's probably going to be towards the end of the academic year that he comes. Like, do you think that that's a situation Florida finds himself in? Because, like, I know he's done a lot of good in terms of, like, fundraising and building things. But, like, what's the tenor around that from, like, your booster friends and people that you know?
I think it's skepticism of having him make a third football hire, quite frankly. You know, he's not going to get fired for cause. They won't be able to do that.
Right.
I think yes, there were two coaching scandals. They were now 3 years ago, I think, almost, right? Women's soccer, women's basketball. So you don't have any reason to to get rid of him. I like Sky. He's a nice guy, conducts himself with integrity, has made, I think, one great hire in men's basketball.
Mm-hmm.
And kept Kevin O'Sullivan from going to LSU. So he has to get some credit for that. But I think, look, we all know what pays the bills, man. And even if football alone doesn't pay the bills, which it does because it's the SEC, like, it's where the passion is. It's what people care about. It's what people set their seasons by, right? So, I don't know. I think there'd be some serious distrust. And I think it'd be tough for Scott, but they haven't said any. None of them have mentioned Strickland yet in any of these conversations, which is interesting to me. But that's just kind of my hunch. Is it would be it's pretty unprecedented to get a third hire.
Yeah, we were talking about it. I was on Spaces yesterday, and it's like you just don't hear about a lot of athletic directors at schools like Florida getting fired very often, unless it's like for cause, right? So like, I'm to the belief whether I like
it. Games are the cause. What do you mean?
Yeah, but like at the end of the day, like I think that Scott Strickland's seat is far cooler than most fans probably want or think.
I think that's fair. I think I do think Scott has looked around a little bit just on his own, you know?
And are you talking about the Texas A&M situation? I mean, they have a new athletic director. So, like, I heard that there was some poking around by Scott.
Well, and the college football playoff presidency, you know, I think was another one that was pretty intriguing to the Strickland fam. So, you know, I don't know. I think a guy like me
to get him out of there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right. got beat out by a general, I guess. But you know, it's definitely a possibility that he leaves on his own anyway.
You send that boy shark fishing.
Oh man. What else you guys got? Anything else before we head out of here?
No, that's it, man. I do expect for the game tomorrow, I do expect them boys to come out firing. I think they got a lot of confidence from the last game. They also seen the product that we put on the field. So this team's going to come in with the intentions of an upset. So, like, we'll see what product we put on the field. But I need Lagway just to scratch the field. I want to see us go deep. And I think we are going to go deep. And then that may change some visions of how we see the offense. But that's it, man. Tune in tomorrow night. Pull up. We still got football to watch. I'm going to enjoy every fall. Yeah. I don't know how many falls I got left. You feel me? So
that's the one, man. That's it right there.
Like, we don't. Go ahead, Neil.
No, I just said this is the special time of year, man. Like if you're 3-9, it's still football season.
Yes, sir.
Yep. We just got through an entire like 7 months of having to listen to Nick talk about baseball, and we're scattering around to try to find guests and this, that, and the other thing. It's finally here. So I'm going to enjoy it. Right. Like, no matter how well the Gators are doing or not, like, I'm going to watch, right. Like, trying to figure out like the plan tomorrow, and Brooke's like, well, are the Gators playing? I'm like, yeah, sure. All right. Well, we'll do something where you can watch the game. We don't have to, but like, yeah, like let's do that. Right. Shout out to her. It was her birthday yesterday. So
happy birthday to Brooke, man.
Happy birthday, Brooke.
Well, we appreciate everybody for watching. I had about 1,000 of you guys watching live. We appreciate each and every one of you. If you're watching on YouTube, please hit the like button, hit the subscribe button. Before we leave, Neil is a must follow. He is one of the best when it comes to covering the Gators and covering a lot of the sport beyond just what you see with your eyeballs. So, Neil, let everybody know where they can find you on social media and where they can read your articles and everything else.
Yeah, appreciate it. At NW Blattman's up there. That's the Twitter. Catch my articles at Saturday Down South. And if you like basketball, support Florida Basketball Hour.
Absolutely.
You know, because them boys are about to be good. I'm going to tell all sorts of lies are about to be told.
Yeah.
Shout out to Todd, man.
I had the opportunity to talk to Todd last Tuesday. Neil, stick around after the show and I'll tell you what he said. It was off the record. But anyway, we appreciate you guys for listening each and every week. We'll see you on Monday at 6:30. Thank you guys for watching. Everybody have a great weekend, and we will see you soon. Go Gators.
Go Gators.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? If you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. Choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.